Thanks for listening in to our sixth conversation in the Landmark series. Joining me this time are the same two friends that helped me with our first conversation on Landmark One, Carter and Daniel. Guys, I've journeyed many roads with you, and I'm just thankful that you're in my life and in the studio here today. So good to have you here today.
Thanks, man.
Again, thank you. As we've done in the other landmarks, let me just introduce this briefly before we get into our conversation. This is a sixth landmark called Battle, and perhaps a good way to introduce it is this. I've been a part of a men's group now for a couple of years, committed to honesty and integrity in telling our past stories and our present struggles. And these are all well-respected men in their churches, their communities, their workplaces. But underneath the surface of seemingly peaceful, well-kept lives, I've heard war stories, stories of terrible battles, of grief and loss, stories of addiction and longing, stories of fathers that abandoned, fathers that abused, stories of family strife, stories of marital sadness. I find myself walking away from our times both sobered and comforted. First, I'm comforted because I realize I'm not the only man who feels like at times I'm in a death struggle. But I'm sobered because I see the casualties of the war right in front of me each week. I'm face to face with a reality I often want to escape from or just ignore. For whatever else this present life is, I know one thing for sure, it's a battle, a titanic one that wounds and maims and sometimes even mutilates. Now, with all the shots being fired around us and at us, we can easily point the finger at others and at ourselves as the culprits behind these conflicts and struggles. And of course, there's a lot of truth to that idea. But the Bible points to an additional source, an additional force in the war, one that's hidden, covert, and often overlooked. The Apostle Paul puts it this way, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." To see the battle clearly, according to the Bible, we have to look deeper into evil itself, personified in the devil and in the forces ruled by him. But this involves seeing life very differently. It's not apparent on the surface of things. That's why this sixth landmark is the first one and what I've called the ascent landmarks. We're waking up to our true life in Christ, and this means waking up to the war that is set against us. And this is where we want our conversation to go today. So, men, let's dive in. Here's where I want to start today. So much of the battle is simply waking up to the battle, and we're just easily deceived into a peacetime mentality. We're lulled to sleep. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how that happens, how we're just, we just sort of fall asleep when the shots are firing around us. Who wants to start?
Well, you know, give me a good meal and a little sunshine, some trip that's coming in the next month I'm really looking forward to.
I'm syncing with you.
have a couple people tell me how much, you know, what something I did made them feel, you know, impressive. They were impressed with me. And it's pretty easy for me to forget that I'm in a battle,
you know,
and so interesting for me, it's kind of like any time there's something that this world offers that feels hopeful,
right?
So anytime I have worldly hope is another way of saying it, then I forget that I'm in a war zone and, life seems pretty good.
Right.
And so that's how I'm so often lulled is it's so easy. I don't even know I'm doing it most of the time.
Right. Yeah. That's part of it. You just all of a sudden you're there. You're just asleep.
Right.
You know, you don't even realize you're asleep. That's the definition of being asleep.
Right. And what's hard too is that a lot of these things that I'm describing that can do the lulling are good gifts from God. Mm-hmm. You know, these legitimate pleasures.
Yes, they are.
But I kind of set up shop in those areas. But then. Not to jump ahead, but you know, then something will happen, and I'm like, wait a minute!
What are we doing?
Right.
What's going on?
This is really hard.
I call that a holy disruption.
Yes, yeah,
and it is. We're disrupted. I get lulled to sleep too. You know, by just kind of whatever pleasures I can sort of grab at the moment. You know, the next movie, the next vacation, the next whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just forget. And there's an intellectual component for me. I get sort of lulled to sleep because when I think about, you know, a warfare battle or even going deeper, spiritual warfare, the devil, there's a part of me that kind of pushes back and go, you know, or I have this image of weird people think about that sort of thing, or strange people kind of go there, and I don't want to be with those. And so I sort of can be at times even dismissive of that. And that's part of the war, too, to sort of wake up to this reality. So certainly I can be easily deceived there. What about you, Carter?
You know, I think even as I listened to you guys, I was thinking, okay, how did I begin to really wake up to this? And I think for me, as I've gotten older, I was trying to find some sort of framework that described the experiences of my life and the experiences of the lives of people that I work with. Some sort of framework that made sense. I would even say a language. Framework language that made sense of what I was seeing in my own life and the lives of people around me. So, for example, I think about my marriage relationship, easily the most intense relationship that I have. And I began to think through, okay, what's the conflict here? Right. What are the stresses? What's really, really going on here? And what is my posture towards my wife to be? And I've got I'll just tell you right up front, for me, the posture of fighting for her heart in the sense of a battle to fight for her explained or resonated most deeply.
It gave you a framework that seemed
really
to fit.
It really did. And I could think in terms of how do I best love her but to fight for her heart and her good.
And that's so interesting because you saw the framework of seeing the battle for somebody else. And your part of it is how you sort of began to wake
But then, you know, you mentioned Paul talks about our battle is not against flesh and blood. Of course, the first thing he says is there's a battle. You just got to identify the right enemy.
Right. Mm-hmm,
and
right.
So as I began to see, okay, I'm not fighting with my wife. I'm fighting for her.
Right. The chief enemy is not her.
Yeah. There's something. There's
much
something
bigger.
Much bigger going on.
Yeah.
Then, of course, that translated to every other relationship, looking at larger circumstances.
Yeah.
And it explains the world and evil much more clearly.
It does.
So it's just helped me with the whole framework of how to live. Because I, like you, you know, I thought we were in a world at peace. And so I have come to understand, and I used to be in the military, so I've come to understand, quite frankly, the military in peacetime is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But in battle, it's incredibly efficient.
Yes.
And so I have learned that if I have the proper mindset towards life, I'm so much more motivated.
Yeah, yeah. You're actually energized.
I think that's what we're made for.
Yeah, and a lot of the idols that seem to pull it, they don't because you're like, I gotta fight today. I can't go here. So there's
strength seriously.
Yeah, yeah. There is a focusing that we all need here that's so important.
Yeah, and you know, when you say focusing, here's what I think about. Can you imagine if we were 60 years ago waking up in France in World War II, how focused we would be every morning when we woke up?
Yeah.
If we knew that there was going to be real bullets fired, that focuses me.
I think what is ironic about this conversation is, if I get my history correct, this is December the 7th when the bombs flew on Pearl Harbor, and U.S. wanted to ignore or escape from the reality of war, and now they couldn't because it was, you know, they were decimated.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela died just a couple of days ago, and one quote that really riveted me was, he said, "Good and evil are always fighting, and good men must choose." And he lived in the reality of there is a titanic battle going on, and people have to choose how they're going to fight and what they're going to fight for. So let's do some storytelling here and talk about how the battle has happened in us recently. Satan's major schemes in the war are underneath the covert battle that's going on underneath all the overt sort of struggles that we have and conflicts are accusation, temptation, and deception. So let's just do a little storytelling, talk about how the battle has surfaced in us perhaps recently and how those schemes sort of play their way out. And I think I'm going to start on this one, and just because this one's very fresh to me. It actually happened last night. Through the impetus of some friends and through my own work, have begun to look at starting a program aimed at fathers and sons, which I've just called the Father-Son Initiative. And I've thought about this for a long time and have finally taken the steps to sort of push it out, and we're going to gather some fathers together actually this morning to just plan the pilot for it. And last night, as we had a dear friend come over for dinner, and last night he left, and all of a sudden I started thinking about, seriously, I've got to meet together with five other fathers and have a sense of this is where we need to go, and this is why I want to lead this thing. And inside of me, I felt all of a sudden everything just collapse. It's so hard for me to put words to, but it's as if I was going to be pressing into this father-son issue in a way that I feel like I can offer something that's substantial. And I felt this spiritual force field, almost like this tremendous resistance saying, you can't go here. And if you go here, you will go down. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I heard these voices of condemnation, things like, this is never going to work. Don't you remember how you failed in this? Are you sure you want to get up there and fail this way again? And then some of it wasn't even verbal. It was just feelings that were pulled up from past failures that I know what it's like, and past moments of shame. And these were just sort of rolled over me like waves. And in about 10 minutes, Heidi looked at me and she goes, what is wrong with you? And I was like, it's hard for me to even put words to this. And all of a sudden I realized I'm in the middle of the war. And it was so disorienting, and this is the way it happens to me. I get disoriented, and then I go in to try and figure out what's going on, and I can actually push everybody else out, which can make the war even worse. Yeah. So for me, that war is definitely about accusation. That's how it comes to me so much. Deception and temptation are also themes, but for me, the accusation theme is huge. So I had to fight through that just last night. Mm.
So one story about a year ago for me, and I was at a men's conference, and the point of it was to really connect with the love of God. And one of the exercises they did was the speaker and a couple of the co-leaders would go around. There were about 30 of us participants, and at the beginning of each session, they'd go around and they would get up kind of in your face and look you in the eye for a while. And then they would say, you are a son of God. Mm. And they would do this over and over again throughout the weekend whenever we'd have a session. It's very powerful. And toward the end, instead of them doing it, they brought a mirror. And they would hold it up in front, and you were to kind of say to yourself, you're a son of God, which is very biblical. It's your identity.
Right.
And when they came around and held it up, If it could have been verbal, it would have been screaming, deafening in my ears. And it felt like I was saying it to myself.
Yes.
And it wasn't until later I realized I wasn't. But you're ugly. That's all that I could see, hear, think when they came around and put the mirror up in front of my face was, I'm so ugly. Mm. But it was you. I was saying it to myself. And it rocked me. And I told a friend and a co-leader there about it because, you know, they're kind of debriefing later. So what was that like? And I said, that was really uncomfortable for me. And I did not realize, but I believe that was demonic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the point of it, was it totally distracted me from the truth of not that I am attractive, but the truth that I'm the son of God,
right,
a son of God. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And my mind was not anywhere
right
to there, you know, as long as I was listening. And so to me, that was a very, and that actually has, that kind of accusation and has come at me since, and I've kind of recognized it. But, and here's the other thing, that the reason that I kind of recognize it as warfare is that my brain was a million miles away from having any thought of what I looked like or didn't look like up until that moment. Mm-hmm. So it, to me, it was kind of like, what, where did that come
from?
Yeah,
it's totally out of the blue.
Absolutely. Like, it was almost like John Eldridge says sometimes when he talks about warfare that sometimes demons will actually kind of overplay their hand a little bit, where they kind of can become obvious. And to me, I'm like, that was so odd.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk about standing here in a minute, but one other quick story I want to share is in preparation for this very talk, a few days ago, I was looking up on YouTube a clip from a war movie that I'm very familiar with. And so I typed in, you know, the movie that I was looking for, and you know, on YouTube, on the side, they've got all the other movie options or you know, blippets of things you may want that are supposed to be similar, related, connected to whatever you searched.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are, you know, a dozen different war movie scenes of other options. And mixed in, right in the middle, was a movie that I've never seen. And the picture on the screen was a nude woman.
Uh-huh.
Laying on a beach, looking at the camera in a provocative way. And it pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because it felt so, again, it didn't even fit.
Right.
It had nothing to do with anything. And even as I think of the timing, and it was something that I was able to talk to a buddy about. You know, I didn't click on it, didn't go back and look at it, but it was something that it felt like a grenade that the enemy wanted to use to kind of
just blow this whole thing up.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And just ticked me off.
Yeah. Well, I think for you, when I hear that story, the good response is one of anger. Because
well, it worked.
Because,
well,
what I'm saying is, well, rather than all of a sudden you get sunk
you
in that.
You respond to evil like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you respond to evil. I think that's where our anger needs to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, you know, men routinely struggle with anger, and it's like, this is the place where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think for me, what I would say in thinking about this is the enemy it deceives me and throws out a lie as truth, and then I've got a decision to make. So I would go back even further. So early on in my life, the enemy threw out the lie to me that you're on your own. So he spoke that as supposed truth. You're on your own, and so I made what I have come to find a helpful term. I made an agreement. There's some authors that use that term as a term and part of this warfare dialogue. So the agreement I made was with that lie. And an agreement is when you take it as truth and begin to live out of it.
Right.
And so much of my life, I was living out of a lie, and I'd made an agreement with, I'm on my own. And I cannot tell you how that profoundly affected the way I related, for example, to people. And the way I related to them was, if I'm on my own, I've got to do everything I possibly can to win your affection so you don't leave me, because I don't want to be alone.
Mm.
And so believing that lie, making that agreement, it warped every relationship that I ever had. And so part of the warfare that I fight is looking at the deceptions that the enemy offers me.
Because there are many others that get served up to us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting you should mention about that lady on the internet. I'm not sure it was the same lady. I think it was an advertisement. But there was a lady served up as a sacrificial offering for lust on the internet for me, just in one of these pop-up ads that you just can't avoid. Mm-hmm. And of course, the lie is somehow I can be satisfied
right.
with that. So I see the enemy offering these things. And my question is, am I going to make an agreement with this?
Right.
And I've been going back and looking at the long-term agreements I've made. And part of my warfare, I was going to say, is breaking these agreements. Mm-hmm. Things that I've bought into that are lies that I've lived out of for
right.
so long that control my actions.
Yes, yes.
So that's a real point of warfare.
It is. Yeah. And pulling that up, because these things are deep. They're so deep inside of us. And we hardly even know how to put words to them. And sometimes, you know, because we don't have words to them, we just feel like we're strangled by them. And putting words to them and bringing them up out in the open is, and into the light, is how these things start to be managed and fought against.
Part of the learning how to fight these battles, and I'm so glad we can talk about this, I think part of, for me, learning how to fight these battles is learning the language of warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's when you're in the military, you got to learn the language.
I will say this.
It's the briefing. It's all the training.
It can get spooky.
Yes.
And the church can tend to want to make this kind of stuff spooky and weird. I think we need to be careful with the way we discuss this, but not secretive or ashamed, because mm-hmm. I think that's part of the enemy's ploy, is to make us, you know, to present himself, you know, as a devil in red tights.
Right.
So we look like fools.
Right.
Talking about it when, you know, we face a vicious enemy, and we better...
Right.
Get prepared for this.
Which brings us to our kind of our last question today, right into it, because the Apostle Paul, after talking about the battle against the evil one, said, you know, our main posture is not one of advancing, assaulting. Our main posture is standing. And it's a defiant, resistant standing, mm-hmm. a refusal to yield and give in. It's that kind of standing. And it's kind of just what you were talking about. It's pulling up, you know, those agreements, those promises you've made, and learning to say no. And when we learn to stand, it's doesn't feel good often. It feels actually terrible, because all of a sudden, all the stuff you've capitulated to and you've just gone with, you feel the full weight of it, because now you're in the river and you're not going with the flow anymore. So standing can be incredibly uncomfortable and feel awful. But the promise is, you know, the enemy has to yield his ground.
He has to
flee.
Yeah.
And my experience of this was, just again, it's very fresh to me. I went to bed last night knowing I was going to come to this meeting in the morning with these men. And I woke up in the morning, I felt fragile. I felt... not too sure where this was going to go. I remember just calling out on the name of the Lord, speaking the truth to myself. You know, I'm a beloved son. There's no condemnation in Christ. And I was just speaking these truths to myself, but I still felt fragile. And I got to the meeting. It was a great meeting. We spent about an hour and a half speaking about talking about how we're going to pull this Father-Son initiative off. And at the end of it, I was sheepish. I have to admit it. At the end of it, I finally said, y'all, I have to tell you what happened. And I began to explain a little bit about the war that I felt like I had been in on this. And it felt like I was sort of undressing in front of them. Like it felt kind of weird, like I don't know what they're going to do with this. But I've learned that's part of my standing in Christ. I have to have others around stand with me. And I just went there and I just said it. And one of them immediately said, We need to huddle around you, lay our hands on you, and pray for you. And they just did that. And for me, it was a huge breakthrough into this, that my standing is together as with the other saints. So that's just a very, fresh thing that happened to me, learning to stand and stand with other people.
Hmm.
How does the standing work with y'all? Or where are your struggles here with this?
In the very mundane things of life, I often find. So here's something that happened with me. A couple of days ago, my wife asked me to do something that was very inconvenient and consequently very irritating. Okay.
I've never felt that before.
Oh, my gosh. She asked me to do something. I needed to load something in her car, and it was freezing cold, raining. Okay? So not only was it a hassle to get it in the car, it's hard to carry, but it was miserable outside. So I had to walk through the misery to get into the car. So, and as I reflect on it later, I do believe this is what's happened. So the enemy throws out the lie. She constantly asks you to do things like this, and she can be so irritating.
Hmm.
Okay. Now I think of that as she is so irritating.
Right.
But you know what? I believe that's the enemy. I believe that's. Hmm. I've come to believe that that's a thought that's quote foreign to me.
Yeah. Not everything that comes into our head is from us.
Yeah. And I'm not. Please hear me say, we got to be careful with that. Because I do believe in the flesh too,
right. And we have to own our part in this, absolutely.
Yeah, but I realized, I tell you, and here was my standing to answer your question. I stood there and said,
out in the rain?
No. I made this decision before I went out in the rain, because I would have never gone out in the rain if I hadn't stood. Well, I stood in my den and I said, I'm going to do this for her because I love her, and this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And then boom. And then you know what I found out as I was going through the rain? Delight. I was delighted to serve her.
Mm.
And see, that's when I begin to understand this language of warfare, I think I was able to identify what's going on.
Right. And what's so interesting about that story, it's so mundane. It's not some huge conflict.
Yeah.
It's not some massive. It is just these little things, these little sort of things that sort of pick at us.
Yeah.
That if we keep going down, they can become huge fires.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Daniel, what about you? Standing.
Well, you know, my standing recently has been, I've been meditating on when Jesus said, I tell you this so you'll have peace in your heart. In this world, you're going to have a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But there's more to the story than what you see, you know, and I've overcome the world. And going back to the idea of the being lulled asleep, I just think Jesus, he was very clear, kind of at the moment of his, right before his crucifixion, this life is going to be really, really hard. He doesn't just say a little trouble, many troubles. Mm-hmm. And so a friend told me the other day that he thinks a life of faith has got to include an equal mix of grief and hope and faith. And I find myself, when life does get really hard, and whether it's flesh or satanic or just the world, that for me to come back to, I am putting my hope in a person whose claims to be bigger than all of this hard stuff, including temptation and shame and things that I would believe, struggle to believe. Mm. And he has said that he will make things all new, and that I'll be included in that. I get choked up thinking about that. To me, that has what standing has looked like. That's not very formulaic, I guess, but...
It's not a formula sometimes. It's just a posture.
That's a good way to say it.
It's just a posture we need to sort of remind ourselves of all the time.
That's a good way to say it. You know, another way of standing that I've done is playing out... Well, so in the example of when I looked in the mirror, what I did with that is, as Carter said, remind himself of what was true. I had to step back and say, okay, whatever I look like, good, bad, or otherwise, God gave this to me. I am who I am because of God.
Right.
And so that was my kind of renouncing the lie and not... Mm-hmm. Buying into that and setting into
not swallowing it.
Right, exactly. Not swallowing it.
Yeah, and that's the part of the standing.
Resistance. Yes.
That's that resistance piece. And the resistance, I will say, there are moments where the resistance has to have a fierceness to it. Because, at these point, it just keeps coming.
And
so there's a repetitive...
Too.
nature to this standing that needs to go on at times. So,
and I find, and even as I'm talking with you guys, I'm drawn to you guys. I find also the standing when I can stand with other brothers.
Yes,
having more eyes
right
on my life
right
is
right
extremely
yeah
helpful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
when I'm a bullet shot at my back, somebody else can see
yeah
it and help me. And so
yeah
I've recently, as part of my own battle in this, found a band of brothers and then in that found the value of the band
right
of brothers
yeah
to
yeah
fight this battle together.
Well, we are we're out of time, and this is a great note to end on, because I consider both of you my part of my band of brothers to fight this war. And we cannot do this alone. We cannot do this alone. That's all for our sixth conversation, and I hope you'll continue to join us in these conversations. And the seventh one will be on the seventh landmark, entitled Bond. That's all for now.